The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, just send your comments to td@kpcg.fm. Well, up at thetrumpet.com right now, we have a couple of new stories. One by Andrew Miller on the murder rate in the United States. Really some shocking trends over the last couple of years. Following the Ferguson effect, to paraphrase Heather McDonald, who talked about what happened there in Ferguson and just the way the police have reacted in particular in some of those inner cities, some of America's biggest cities, and how the police are pulling back. And so we see a corresponding rise in violence and bloodshed in America's biggest cities. That's at the top of the Trumpet website right now, along with the latest on North Korea's missile launch. This week, you might have seen some headlines, too, about the assassination of the North Korean, a relative of the North Korean leader. Richard Palmer also has a piece up there that I think we posted 6 or 7 hours ago that builds on some of the content that we used in yesterday's program. German army continues to swallow its neighbors. We went through some of this yesterday. But in Richard's piece here, he says the rise of a Europe capable of fielding a powerful military force independent of the United States would be one of the biggest geopolitical events in the last century. I mean, he writes about how this is revolutionizing the balance of power in the world. And it's something that only Herbert Armstrong was predicting 50, 60, 70 years ago. He said way back in May of 1953 that 10 powerful European nations will combine their forces. And that's what we see happening. I mean, the Union itself hasn't yet been whittled down to the 10. But we see discussions between nations. And what will emerge out from this? Well, perhaps this is what's taking us to those 10 kings of Revelation 17. 10 powerful European nations will combine their forces. Herbert Armstrong wrote that in May of 1953. 1953. He said back in 1978, I gave you this quote a few weeks back, I believe. This again is in Richard Palmer's article. The Europeans are far more disturbed about their safety and relying on United States military power to protect them than Americans realize. I mean, this is what the plain truth was saying back in 78. It says Europeans want their own united military power. They want their own military force. And so that brings us back to this point we've been making in the last couple of weeks. What a huge opportunity this is, this new administration in the United States. These comments directed at NATO, this admonition for Europe, for Germany to take the lead, for Germany to go forward, take control, is the article we posted last week. That's been the message. That's been the message coming from Donald Trump and his administration, aimed at Germany. You take control. That was in 1978, that previous statement that I gave to you. It says here, they know that a political union of Europe would produce a third major world power as strong as either the U.S. or the USSR, possibly stronger. That's what the plain truth was saying back in 1978. Now, Herbert Armstrong knew that this cooperation between the 10, he knew it wouldn't come easy. Daniel 2, remember, says it's a mixture of iron and clay. But now you look at Europe and, I mean, really, and with the pressure coming from so many different directions, they're making the case that, well, hey, we're being forced into this. We have no other choice but to build a military. And as I said yesterday, I mean, they're just getting a pass. They're being congratulated as they do it. That's really what's the astounding development from this this story. Well, that's a little synopsis of Richard Palmer's article and some of the news, some of the more recent headlines coming out of Europe. And meanwhile, in the United States, I mean, there's just more and more problems, like Andrew Miller brings out in his piece that's up at the top of the Trumpet website right now. The family breakdown, the fatherlessness, and the violence and the murder in America's big cities. And then the breakdown of government in Washington, D.C. Massive amounts of debt and spending, federal spending. And then bitter division between the parties. And you look at a number of prophecies regarding the clash that leads us into the Great Tribulation. And in the case of that one in particular, Daniel 11, the United States isn't even mentioned. That's because the problems in the United States are so bad. They're too weak. They're too weak to help Israel, little Judah, I mean. They're too weak to even respond to these Gentile forces, these ascendant powers. You look at some of the headlines today in the New York Times. I mean, they're really, and they're not going to stop. They're going after the Trump administration. The top story for the Times today, Trump campaign aides had repeated contacts with Russian intelligence. Here they are trying to, and of course they've brought in the firing of Michael Flynn as part of this story as well. All the communications he was having with Russia, even before the Trump administration came into power. But this first story here, these contacts, Trump's aides, the contacts they've had with Russian intelligence, I mean, if you actually read the article, you see there that they've found no evidence. This is to quote the New York Times. No evidence of cooperation between the Trump campaign and the Kremlin. And that, quote, it's not clear whether the intercepted communications had anything to do with Mr. Trump's campaign or Mr. Trump himself. So there's really nothing more in this story than what has been discussed in recent weeks. And yet, there's lots and lots of members of the media that have hopped right on this, saying how bad it is. I mean, how is this man still in office? How is he not impeached by now? And it's not going to stop. I think the other story that the Times has on its front page today has a fair bit more in it. As far as facts, the title is Unbelievable Turmoil, Trump's First Month Leaves Washington Reeling. Now, again, the Times is no friend of the Trump administration, but still, some of the developments from the past 4 weeks that this article rattles off, beginning with the resignation of Michael Flynn, the firing, actually. The president asked him to resign, and that happened late Monday night. And then the Times, as it brings out here, there's been scandals, there's been legal challenges, obviously, to that executive action that the president took on illegal immigration. There's been, obviously, personnel drama with Mr. Flynn. There's been clashes with world leaders, the Mexican president, the spat that Donald Trump had with the Australian leader. And then there have been all these leaks as well. Most notably, of course, these leaks that led to Mike Flynn's resignation. We'll come back to that in just a second. But the Times says here the resignation on Monday night and the continuing turmoil inside the National Security Council have deeply rattled the Washington establishment. It goes on to quote what Senator John McCain said yesterday, how that nobody knows who's in charge, which I'm not sure why he would think that. I mean, that's pretty clear. But the fact that there is continuing turmoil, that's obvious as well. It says here, quoting General Tony Thomas, head of the military Special Operations Command, he expressed his concern this way. Our government continues to be in unbelievable turmoil. Well, the Bible does talk about America's problems and America's government in turmoil. Even as you have all of these other ascendant powers, even as you come into the times of the Gentiles, there's this broader sense of chaos, as the New York Times says. Right within the United States, it talks about the global outrage, particularly with the ban on travelers coming in from those seven nations that the Trump administration identified. The Times says here, the president angrily provoked the cancellation of a summit meeting with the Mexican president, hung up on Australia's prime minister, authorized a commando raid that resulted in the death of a Navy SEAL, repeatedly lied about the existence of millions of fraudulent votes cast in the 2016 election, and engaged in Twitter wars with senators, a sports team owner, a Hollywood actor, and a major department store chain. His words and actions have generated almost daily protests around the country. Well, and a lot of that's being stirred up by the major media. But still, you can't deny the fact that this is an administration that's in some bit of turmoil right now. What started off with a bang, particularly in the eyes of Trump supporters, those first couple of weeks with all of those actions, the dizzying pace. Well, now the honeymoon appears to be over, if you could even call it that, because the media was against him from the beginning, for sure. But now, I mean, for your national security advisor to be fired after 24 days. George Friedman's take on that. I mean, you may have read some of the stories about he had these communications with the Russian ambassador and brought up sanctions and whether or not those would be eased or what. That's been in the major media coverage. But Friedman says that Flynn's fall came about because Donald Trump lost confidence in him. And he brings out the fact that pretty much those things that were leaked to the media weren't really that condemning, and that Flynn probably could have survived all of this had not Trump withdrawn his support. But once he lost the support, that was it. Friedman says the real problem is not that he spoke to the Russians or visited Moscow. That was from a trip in 2015, I believe. There was no secret deal, Friedman says. Rather, the problem was that he tried to execute a radical shift in strategy that was actively opposed by senior officials. When they heard that what Flynn was doing, they went ballistic. And so that's probably the main reason for this. You can look at the Trump administration. Well, if you just look at the actions of Russia, it's no wonder that there's some division in the administration about how to approach Vladimir Putin. There's no denying the many complimentary remarks that President Trump himself said during the campaign, and even as recently as a couple of weeks ago to Bill O'Reilly in that interview on Super Bowl Sunday. But here Russia is now deploying missiles, as it says in the New York Times from the other day, challenging Trump for the first time. You have these Russian planes buzzing our ships in the Black Sea. That happened just last week. This other story from the New York Times says the Obama administration, well, let me just back up. Russia has secretly deployed a new cruise missile that American officials say violates a landmark arms-controlled treaty. The ground-launched cruise missile at the center of American concerns is one that the Obama administration said in 2014 had been tested in violation of a 1987 treaty that bans American and Russian intermediate-range missiles based on land. Well, that was the president Obama administration complaining when they were in the works. Now those plans have been followed through on, and they're being deployed. And it's causing grave concern in the Pentagon. And it's also impacting, again, politics in the United States, in Washington, and in the White House in particular. It says here also, the deployment of the system could also substantially increase the military threat to NATO options, or NATO nations, sorry, NATO nations, depending on where the highly mobile system is based and how many more batteries are deployed in the future. So going back to Richard Palmer's article and what we discussed yesterday, you think about how this is affecting Europe. The United States is wrestling with how to counter this. But there's a lot of people in Europe, of course, that are much closer to the threat of these missiles. And so it's really affecting. It's going to substantially increase that military threat on NATO nations, Eastern Europe. So the response to this from Europe is really the development we want to keep our eyes on. Well, going back to how that these revelations about Mr. Flynn's communications with the Russian ambassador were made known, Eli Lake had a piece at Bloomberg View that got some traction in conservative media circles. It's titled The Political Assassination of Michael Flynn. And Lake says here there's another component to this story as well, as Trump himself just tweeted. It's very rare that reporters are ever told about government-monitored communications of U.S. citizens, let alone senior U.S. officials. And Lake says here, normally, intercepts of U.S. officials and citizens are some of the most tightly held government secrets. This is for good reason. Selectively disclosing details of private conversations monitored by the FBI or NSA gives the permanent state the power to destroy reputations from the cloak of anonymity. And he says this is what police states do. I mean, the fact that the NSA or the FBI, whoever it was, released these transcripts, these conversations between Flynn and his Russian counterpart, and gave them to the news media and said, this is what he's doing. I mean, he was a target, and they went after him. I mean, this is the intelligence community of the United States just handing over these transcripts. As Eli Lake brings out, this is how police states behave. They want to bring someone down. They just release this sensitive information. And they can do it behind this cloak of anonymity. This article, Lake's article, it quotes from Representative Devin Nunes. He's a Republican chairman of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. And he told Eli Lake Monday, there does appear to be a well-orchestrated effort to attack Flynn and others in the administration. From the leaking of phone calls between the president and foreign leaders, like the president's talk with the Australian prime minister, and what appears to be high-level FISA court information, to the leaking of American citizens being denied security clearances, it looks like a pattern. I mean, we're just 4 weeks in. We're 4 weeks in. And as Eli Lake goes on to bring out, Flynn was an especially big target for the national security state. They had good reason to go after him. I won't get into all of that here. It's a lot of detail. But obviously he was a big target for Democrats, and he's a big target for the media. And now he's gone after 24 days. Lake concludes here, in the end, it was Trump's decision to cut Flynn loose. In doing this, he caved in to his political and bureaucratic opposition. Nunes told me Monday night that this will not end well. And then it quotes Nunes saying here, first it's Flynn, next it will be Kellyanne Conway, then it will be Steve Bannon, then it will be Reince Priebus. Put another way, Lake concludes, Flynn is only the appetizer. Trump is the entree. Indeed, Donald Trump has a lot of enemies. He has a lot of enemies. in the intelligence community, on Capitol Hill, certainly in the Democratic opposition, in the major media, in foreign capitals all over the world. He's public enemy number one. And there's not going to be any let up. If you think about that section, if you look in the Great Again booklet, page 23, there's a section there, the real Watergate scandal. And my father just briefly talks about what led up to President Richard Nixon's resignation back in 1974. His people had broken into the Democratic National Committee headquarters, and then there was the cover up and so on, and the tapes, the audio tapes and so on and so on. But as my father brings out in Great Again, there's a lot more to that story than just what appears there on the surface. He says in Great Again, President Nixon was a staunch opponent of communism, and the left hated him for it. He says, at the time of Watergate, Rupert Murdoch, who now owns Fox News, said the American press get the pleasure in successfully crucifying Nixon, but the last laugh could be on them. See how they like it when the commies take over the West. That's what Rupert Murdoch said back in 1974. And then my father says, what happened at that time has a lot to do with what we see today. It has a lot to do with what we see has happened to the Democratic Party. He quotes from an article by Dr. Hay, Herman Hay. He wrote a piece for The Plain Truth back in 1980. Saying that the president, President Nixon, had recognized the conspiracy, the communist infiltration of the left in America, of the Democratic Party. And he was out to break it up. And for that, Dr. Hay said, he was driven out of the presidency because part of his plan involved preventing the far left from capturing the Democratic Party. He said that's all a part of the story that most people don't realize. Watergate was not an attempt to see who was at some party of the Democratic headquarters. It was far more serious. That's Herman Hay writing back in 1980. Well, now you look at the Democratic Party today, and it's controlled by the radical left, the communist left. Some of the details that my father alludes to in that section in Great Again are covered in Jeff Shepard's book, The Real Watergate Scandal. He published that in 2015, a couple of years ago. The Washington Times had a piece on Shepard, his book, back in August of 2015. It says Shepard served as deputy defense counsel for the Nixon administration during the Watergate hearings. It was the first and hopefully the only presidential resignation in our nation's history, Shepard told the Washington Times, but it seared my soul, and I've spent many intervening years trying to understand how everything went so wrong. 4 decades later, I've begun to appreciate what the real tragedy was. In one of the ultimate ironies of political history, it appears that the smoking gun tape has been totally misunderstood. That the president need not have resigned, and that he was actually driven from office and his senior aides imprisoned. Through highly improper actions of judges and Watergate prosecutors. He shows in his book how there was this collusion between judges, prosecutors, reporters, journalists. It says here, finally, documents I've recently uncovered in the National Archives tell a tale of secret meetings, secret memos, and secret collusion that will shock many Americans and that constitute flagrant violations of our Constitution and its Bill of Rights. There's no one on either side today that's rising in defense of those documents, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. It's just a free-for-all. It's all-out political war. That's what we're seeing day in and day out in the United States, in the halls of government, in Washington, D.C. Even as you have all of these earth-shaking and dramatic developments taking place in the Middle East, in Europe, in Russia, in China. You go back again to that prophecy in Daniel 11, and you have this very conspicuous absence of the world's lone superpower. Here is this spectacular clash between the kings of the north and the kings of the north and south. And the United States is nowhere mentioned. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to email us this week. We're already in the hump day of the week. It's Wednesday. Send us an email. You can send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma. America's status as the world's lone superpower is rapidly fading. Other nations and groups of nations are angling to fill the void. Rising in the East is an emerging power block of tremendous potential in manpower, economic heft, and military might. Its growing presence is intensifying global competition for resources and for geopolitical influence. Where will this trend lead? What does this mean for you? Biblical prophecy provides a remarkable, penetrating preview of Asia's future. Request a free copy of Russia and China in Prophecy. This book exposes in startling detail what Russia and China are doing and will do, and how they will affect your life. Also, you'll be sent a free one-year subscription to The Trumpet magazine. The Trumpet looks at today's headlines through the clear light of Bible prophecy. The Trumpet will keep you up to date on the continuing rise of the powers in the East by taking a hard look at today's news and comparing it to the prophecies of the Bible. The Trumpet magazine is this world's most informed news magazine. To learn more, request a free copy of Russia and China in Prophecy. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. Act today and request Russia and China in Prophecy. The Trumpet Daily.
On yesterday's program, we talked about how Bible prophecy is one of the great proofs that the Bible is God's inspired word, fulfilled prophecy. It's proof that God lives, that God reigns supreme over his creation. I went through some passages in Isaiah, and following that, we recorded a program, a video for TV, after the program yesterday, where I prefaced it by just going through a few verses in Daniel 2. That's where I'd like to begin with this segment. Daniel 2, this prophecy in this one chapter that gives us a tremendous overview of history and prophecy. There's no chapter like it in the Bible. And this is the chapter that unlocks the book of Revelation to our understanding. Here in Daniel 2, you have Daniel's exchange with Nebuchadnezzar, interpreting the dream of this great image, what it meant. And just to hit a few high spots, verse 28, it says, "But there is a God in heaven that reveals secrets and makes known to the king, King Nebuchadnezzar, what shall be in the latter days? Your dream and the visions of your head upon your bed are these." Here's what it means. And how did he know? Well, because God revealed it. God reveals secrets. He makes known his secrets, his will, to his servant. In this case, the prophet Daniel. Down in verse 36, it says, "This is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. You, O king, are a king of kings, and the God of heaven has given you a kingdom, power, and strength, and glory." God gave you all this power and glory. That's what God's message was to this Gentile ruler. He gave Nebuchadnezzar his kingdom. It says in verse 38, "And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of the heaven has he given into your hand and has made you ruler over them all. You are this head of gold." And so here was God's interpretation. This head of gold, it represented King Nebuchadnezzar and the Chaldean Empire. It represented this Babylonian Empire that ruled the world from 625 to 539 BC. This image then represented four world-ruling Gentile kingdoms. God inspired this image in this Gentile leader's mind. And then he brought events to pass over a period of millennia to ensure that they followed within this pattern established here in Daniel 2. God actually set up kings or brought them down and raised empires or destroyed kingdoms. All within this prophetic framework. As I read yesterday, this is from Daniel Unlocks Revelation. My father says the Daniel 2 image didn't just evolve. How did these great world-ruling kingdoms, from the time of Nebuchadnezzar down to the time we now live in, take shape like that image? The only way that is possible is if God shaped and molded it to prove that he rules in the kingdom of men. That image teaches the greatest lesson mankind could possibly learn. This is the great lesson, the greatest lesson that we could possibly learn, that God rules in the kingdom of men. That's what God brings out in Daniel chapter 4. But going back to that quote, here's the greatest lesson that you and I can learn. God rules in the kingdom of men. Notice Daniel 4. This is an amazing chapter as well. I didn't get into any of this yesterday. But what a powerful study. What a powerful lesson. Going back to this great lesson, the greatest lesson that we could possibly learn. Daniel 4 and verse 4, it says, "I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in my house and flourishing in my palace. I saw a dream which made me afraid, and the thoughts upon my bed and the visions of my head troubled me." So here's another episode where this king, this Gentile king, receives a vision at night. He can't understand the meaning. He brings in all the magicians and astrologers of the empire, and they couldn't interpret it. And then finally the prophet Daniel is brought in. Verse 8 says, "But at last Daniel came in before me, whose name was Belteshazzar, according to the name of my God, and in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And before him I told the dream, saying, O Belteshazzar, master of the magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in you, and no secret troubles you, tell me the visions of my dream that I have seen, and the interpretation thereof." And he then goes on to describe what he saw. Verse 10, it says, "Thus were the visions of my head and my bed. I saw, and behold, a tree in the midst of the earth, and the height thereof was great. The tree grew and was strong, and the height thereof reached into the heavens, and the sight thereof to the end of all the earth. The leaves thereof were fair, and the fruit thereof much. And in it was meat for all. The beasts of the field had shadow under it, and the fowls of the heaven dwelt in the boughs thereof, and all flesh was fed of it. I saw in the visions of my head upon my bed, and behold, a watcher and a holy one came down from heaven. He cried aloud and said thus, Hew down the tree and cut off his branches and shake off his leaves and scatter his fruit. Let the beast get away from under it and the fowls from his branches. Nevertheless, leave the stump of his roots in the earth, even with a band of iron and brass in the tender grass of the field, and let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the beasts in the grass of the earth. And so in this vision, the entire tree was chopped down. Only the stump remained. It says in verse 16, let his heart be changed from man's, and let a beast's heart be given unto him, and let seven times pass over him. And so whoever this tree represented, it was to be cursed with insanity. He would act and think like a wild, ravenous beast until he learned the lesson that God alone rules over the affairs of men. Verse 17 says, this matter is by the decree of the watchers and the demand of the word of the holy ones, to the intent that the living, notice this, verse 17, that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomsoever he will and sets up over it the basest of men. So the purpose of this dream, this one here in Daniel 4, was to not only teach Nebuchadnezzar that God rules, but to teach the living. Notice what it says there, to the intent that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men. So when we see, as I said yesterday, when we see prophecy fulfilled, Bible prophecy, that teaches us, it reminds us that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men. Remember again, as my father wrote, that image from Daniel 2, it teaches the greatest lesson mankind could possibly learn. You look at the fulfillment of Bible prophecy, and it shows just how much God is in control. And it really helps to instill a proper kind of fear of God. It reveals a lot about God's word, his character, his will, his purpose, his plan. When God sets his will to do something, he does it. And that's why you can stake your life on the reliability of God's word, as I said yesterday. God's word never fails. And so Daniel goes on to give the interpretation here. Verse 20, it says, the tree that you saw, which grew and was strong, whose height reached into the heavens, and the sight thereof to all the earth. Verse 22 says, it is you, O king. You are grown and become strong, for your greatness is grown and reaches unto heaven, and your dominion to the end of the earth. So obviously this great tree represented the king of Babylon. And what happened to him? Verse 24 continues, this is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree of the Most High, which has come upon my lord the king, that they shall drive you from men, and your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make you to eat grass as oxen, and they shall wet you with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over you, till you know, here again, notice the lesson, until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomsoever he will. And so Nebuchadnezzar was made to suffer, to really suffer, until he knew that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men. And of course, that's what all of the mighty of this world are going to have to go through to finally learn this lesson. People are just going to have, you see it from the book of Revelation, as I covered with you last week, Revelation 9, and other chapters in that book, how much we're going to have to be pounded by one disaster after another until we finally learn and know that the Most High rules. That's a lesson that the world hasn't learned yet. But we can look into Bible prophecy and and receive the truth about God's plan and purpose. And be spared what's coming if we'll turn to God in repentance and faith. Verse 26 in Moffat, it says, "The order to spare the stump of the tree's roots means that your kingdom shall be secured for you after you have learned that it is the heavens who reign. Therefore, let my advice be acceptable to you, O king. Make an end of your sins by practicing justice and showing pity to the oppressed. Perhaps your prosperity may be prolonged." But Nebuchadnezzar didn't heed this counsel. He stubbornly refused to submit to God's rule. He was punished for 7 years. He went through this mind change, discussed here in Daniel 4, was living out there among the wild beasts. In the old correspondence course, the one Herbert Armstrong produced many years ago, Lesson 58, it says, "After God had put away his people, Israel, he had placed world government in Nebuchadnezzar's hands. But Nebuchadnezzar had refused to rule according to God's precepts, although they were revealed to him. God put away Israel. Israel and Judah went into captivity. And then God placed world government in Nebuchadnezzar's hands. And Nebuchadnezzar refused to rule according to God's precepts." In verse 29 here, it says, "At the end of 12 months, he walked into the palace." So he had 12 months to change his ways. And this is what happened. "At the end of 12 months, he walked into the palace of the kingdom of Babylon. Is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty?" He obviously hadn't humbled himself. It says in verse 31, "While the word was in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven saying, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken, the kingdom is departed from you." And so here was this great earthly king, perhaps the greatest this world has ever seen. And yet God stripped him of everything. Everything. Verse 33, "The same hour was the thing fulfilled upon Nebuchadnezzar, and he was driven from men and did eat grass as oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till his hairs were grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws. He became just like a beast in the field." For 7 years, Herman Hay, he said this back in June 1953. This is from The Plain Truth. "King Nebuchadnezzar, because of his stubborn refusal to submit to the rule of God, the only way that would have brought him peace of mind and satisfaction, was punished 7 years by having his mind changed to that of a beast. Until he learned that God ruled, he was dethroned and lived among the wild beasts." And then notice this. You'll see how this all factors into Bible prophecy in just a bit. "In like manner, the Chaldean Empire, of which he was a type, was defeated and its dominion was taken from it. But just as Nebuchadnezzar continued to live like a wild beast, so the Babylonish system has continued with leaders having the minds of wild beasts. The Persians, Greeks, Romans, Europeans, even to the days of Hitler and Mussolini, have all been cursed with leaders who think and act like wild beasts." I mean, that's a curse to be under the leadership or the direction of Hitler or Mussolini. "Cursed with leaders who think and act like wild beasts, leaders who glory in war and conquest. And how deceived we are if we think that those kinds of leaders are gone from the earth today. Leaders who glory in war and conquest." Well, you can study maybe Daniel 7 is another chapter we'll study for another time. But here, all of those systems of world government, they're represented in that chapter by these menacing beasts. These four successive Gentile world-ruling empires God describes them in Daniel 7 as beasts. That's what's being resurrected out of the heart of Europe, the seventh and final resurrection of the prophesied beast power, the Holy Roman Empire. Dr. Hay says this: Nebuchadnezzar was forced to live among the wild beasts, just as the successor nations of the Babylonish system have had to fight and struggle constantly against other Gentile nations who are also cursed with the same mind, the same desires to conquer and rule the world. That's why the Babylonish system under Hitler and Mussolini struggled against Russia. And that's why Russia today is plotting to rule the world by intrigue and stealth and lying and deception. This is from 1953. He basically goes on to say leaders in Russia are acting like cunning wild beasts. This is who the United States is trying to cozy up to. Europe knows better. Europe remembers that history. Europe is building up its defense. And soon it'll have a leader, a Daniel 8 man, that experiences a mind change and begins to act like these beast-like leaders of old. That's what your Bible prophesies. Verse 34 says, "And at the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up my eyes unto heaven, and my understanding returned to me, and I blessed the Most High." I mean, here was a fairly positive ending here. "And I praised and honored him that lives forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation." So this Gentile king, Nebuchadnezzar, he had been sinning. He had been living contrary to God's law. He was traveling in the way of war, not peace. God sent him this warning. The king didn't heed. And so God punished him, cursed him with madness, until he thought and acted like a beast in the field. And then finally, he had a change of heart for a time there at the end. Verse 37 says, "Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are truth and his ways judgment. And those that walk in pride, he is able to abase." Isn't that the truth? God is able to abase those who walk with pride, who are deceived by their own vanity. Well, here was Nebuchadnezzar, a Gentile ruler, repenting and admitting that his ways were wrong. Notice how Herbert Armstrong summarized some of this history from Daniel 4. This is from a sermon he gave in the early 1980s, clip 1.
"And through the prophet Daniel, God had told Nebuchadnezzar that he ruled everything, and he had given Nebuchadnezzar, the Gentile king, a chance and an opportunity to yield to God and to let God really rule him and his empire. And I don't know what might have happened if Nebuchadnezzar had done it, but Nebuchadnezzar did not do it. And as a result, the empire was taken away from him. He was sent off for 7 years, and he became like a wild man. Later, his kingdom was restored to him, but his son denied God. And you remember there was the handwriting on the wall, his son Belshazzar. And that very night, the empire was overthrown. Darius the Mede came in and took it over. And then began the times of the Gentiles."
That's Herbert Armstrong in 1982 summarizing what we just studied there in Daniel 4, of course, bringing Daniel 5 into it, when you see the son, Belshazzar, who sees the hand writing on a wall. And then that very night, the empire was overthrown. And as Mr. Armstrong said there, that ushered in this time of the Gentiles. And with respect to prophecy, well, Jesus referred to that in the Gospels, talking about the end time. It's mentioned in Revelation 11, verses 1 and 2. That chapter leads you right up to the return of Christ to this earth, when Jesus Christ makes the kingdoms of this earth God's kingdom. But prior to that, Revelation 11:1, it says, "And there was given me a reed like unto a rod, and the angel stood, saying, Rise and measure the temple of God, and the altar, and them that worship him. But the court which is without the temple leave out," verse 2 says, "and measure it not, for it's given unto the Gentiles. And the holy city shall they tread underfoot 42 months. This is the horrendous time period that we're about to enter into. The times of the Gentiles. The times of these beast-like leaders who trigger wars. Wars of conquest. Leaders who glory in war and conquest. That's what's coming. And so you can read in so many prophecies, Isaiah 10 talks about God using the Assyrian rod, the staff in his hand, and sending it against a hypocritical nation, sending them against the people of his wrath. That's in Isaiah 10. Daniel 8, another prophecy, of course, speaks of that man to head up, that beast power in Europe. And it says of that power that his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. And he shall destroy wonderfully and shall prosper in practice and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people. And through his policy also he shall cause craft to prosper in his hand. Habakkuk 1 is another one. Behold you among the heathen, and regard and wonder marvelously, for I will work a work in your days which you will not believe, though it be told you. For lo, I raise up the Chaldeans. Another end time prophecy. God says that bitter and hasty nation, which shall march through the breadth of the land to possess the dwelling places that are not theirs. 10 nations. With one mind, the mind of a beast. You can read more on that, of course, in Revelation 17. When we come back, we're about out of time, but when we come back, hopefully we can roll through a couple of letters that have come in.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program.
To America's founding fathers, character meant everything to the success of the nation and its leadership. The Constitution was based upon the fundamental principles of religion and morality. These were the primary building blocks of the American nation. George Washington said, "The foundations of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality." Character was no minor issue to America's first president. He regarded it as the basis of national policy. Where did the founding fathers develop these ideas? Many of these principles stemmed from the Holy Scriptures. The Bible provided early Americans with the instruction and guidance of how to properly govern one's life. These beliefs helped build a nation of strong families and upright leaders. Today, America has dismissed the Bible as the foundation of developing righteous character. Men now leave it to themselves to determine right from wrong. Where has the rejection of biblically based principles led this nation? There is a cause for these effects. To understand the course of events that have led this nation to its current state, visit thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab to request our free booklet, Character in Crisis.
The Trumpet Daily.
This letter here actually came in response to the TV program here in the UK. And it's from a viewer in London who said, "When I just began to understand the Bible, albeit just a percentage, it was during the time of the Worldwide Church of God with the late Herbert W. Armstrong as the head. This was sometime in the early 80s. But then I lost contact. Indeed, I was quite impressed with the teachings I received from the books and the Plain Truth magazines. I became convinced that truly here is where the true and living Creator God was working. After approximately 24 years in the desert, unable to continue learning of the Bible, I was to come again in contact with the similar teachings. This was another organization, a Laodicean church. He says, but for some unknown reason, I did not feel the sense of true or complete satisfaction. Maybe because I sensed that Mr. Armstrong's influence was not altogether embraced. One Saturday morning, out of mere curiosity, I tuned in on the program The Key of David in the UK. To my delight, I discovered that the Philadelphia Church of God is the church that is continuing the messages of Mr. Armstrong. I did not hesitate to request your books, booklets, and the Trumpet magazine. I can't begin to tell you how much I enjoy reading them. I ask that you allow me to express my deep, heartfelt thanks to you for the material that I've received from you as I continue to seek for the determination to step up and step out in faith and trust God while you continue His work. That comes from one of our television viewers down in London. I thought you'd enjoy that here at the close of the show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the end of the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to email us at td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.